The following is a Bachelor of Arts production.
Previously on the Supporting Act podcast.
A lot of my peers in the folk scene now were people that were doing punk rock music, you know, when we were all growing up.
This week on a very special Supporting Act podcast.
And in the future, when the robot-human wars are happening, it'll be one of the ways that we test to see if someone's a robot infiltrating. We'll be like, you have to do an improv stand-up routine.
You're listening to episode number 42 of the Supporting Act podcast, in which I interview Steven Sim of improv duo Crumbs. Stay tuned, you might learn something. Welcome to episode number 42 of the Supporting Act podcast. My name is Matt Moskal. I'll be your host. I'm a musician by trade, a journalist by education, and the answer to life, the universe, and everything. If you're unfamiliar with the show, this is the program where we illuminate the careers of comedians, musicians, artists, just a little bit shy of the mainstream spotlight. It is brought to you for free every Wednesday out of the Llama House here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and is made available to you via iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Liberated Syndication, Tumblr.com, as well as ShowbizMonkeys.com on occasion. This week on the show, I will be talking with Steven Sim. He is one half of the improv duo Crumbs, and also the founder of the Winnipeg Improv Festival. For those who are unfamiliar, Crumbs are an improv duo that is based out of Winnipeg, Manitoba. It consists of Steven Sim and Lee White. The duo have traveled around the world performing their brand of character-based lo-fi improv in exotic locations everywhere from Israel to the United Kingdom. Steven is the founder of the Winnipeg Improv Festival, which celebrates 14 years and its 15th performance this year at the Gas Station Arts Center in Osborne Village in Winnipeg, Manitoba. This year's lineup features Rapid Fire Theater from Edmonton, Hip Bang from Vancouver, Der Cactus from Germany, as well as Kevin MacDonald from the famous group The Kids in the Hall. Steven joined me in the Llama House to talk about the origins of the festival, what it's like touring with a rider when you're a vegetarian, and also we just talked a little bit about the nature of collaboration and experimenting on stage with different mediums. It's one for the ages, kids. Let's go to my interview now with Steven Sim.
You're going to edit the beginning to be much better than this, I'm sure. Or do you start usually with, like, chatter and banter?
We usually start with chatter and banter.
Oh, well, yeah. I guess this is it.
I can't really do the whole, like, off the top of this show, like, my next guest is an accomplished improviser, and
Great.
I can't...
It sounds great.
I can't Giangameshi myself for too long without cracking up, though, So it's difficult. It's difficult. That's my weakness, is I can't read things off the cuff, and you know what I mean? It's like, I can say that it's been 15 years now since you started the Winnipeg Improv Festival.
It was the year 2000.
Yeah.
It was the year 2000. So it's 14 years, but it's the 15th installment.
What, did you just double up in the first year?
Well, no, but I'll do the math right now, but I'll use my fingers, so podcasters at home, pod listeners, follow along with your hand. Open your hands up.
Yeah.
And go 2000.
All right.
That's the first one. 2001. See, we're already at two.
All right.
2003, right? So now
we
know that if we count out 15 festivals, it brings us to the year 2014.
Okay.
Because in 1 year, we did two.
Yeah.
We started it, and then, you know. Yeah, it's...
You had so much fun, you did it twice.
Well, you didn't have to do it. I mean, you start at 2000.
Yeah.
And then every year you do one.
Yeah.
There's that extra one there.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
So, we did that. We figured that out. So next year will be our 15 year.
Yeah.
And we'll promote that as the 15 year, but this time is the 15th installment.
Right.
15th annual, so.
So it's been 14 years and you're still going strong.
Yeah.
This year's festival takes place at the Gas Station Arts Center from September 30th to October 4th. Performers include Kevin MacDonald of Kids in the Hall fame, Nadine Antler from Der Cactus, I hope I'm saying that right, and Devin
She's
McKenzie.
From Würzburg, Germany.
Right.
Just to add that to it.
Right. She's coming all the way across the ocean, so...
Yeah, she's already on the continent right now.
Okay.
She's doing a little bit of a Canadian tour, and we were lucky enough to be able to pick her up and have her be a part of our festival.
Yeah. And also Devin McKenzie of Hip Bang, which I like the punctuation on that. It reminds me of a few bands I've seen.
Right. They're very much a band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Along with locals, Outside Joke, members of D&D, Improv, and Rumble Pack, just to name a few. Improv in Winnipeg is looking really strong right now, but I'm actually...
Let's not forget Rapid Fire Theatres also.
Of course, from Edmonton.
Edmonton. They're sending some folks as well, so that'll be...
You're getting the
Jolene,
best of...
Jesse, and Paul, we're getting some heavy hitters from their company, so...
You're getting sort of the best of Western Canada and some of the best in the world as well. So, I mean, like, Winnipeg is looking extremely strong in terms of improv right now. But I'm wondering, like, what was it like in the year 2000 when you started the festival? What inspired you to create something on this scale?
Well, I will say that in the year 2000, the world was a different place. We had been improvising for a while. Crumbs had been around since 97. Lee and I have been working together and improvising since 92. I had actually just returned from doing a little bit of an improv pilgrimage myself.
Okay.
So I was... Lee and I both went to Vancouver. Lee moved there for a couple of years. I was there for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
We met improvisers in Edmonton, Vancouver, I went down to Seattle, I went to Chicago, I went to Toronto, I went to Montreal. I just went to other cities just to see what they were doing.
Yeah.
It had been a long time that we'd been improvising in our own kind of little pond. And I think every artist or improviser or band or comedian, they reach a point where they just want to see what's going on in other cities.
Yeah.
And it was just like eye-opening. It was great, realizing that there was a common language and a commonality just in the art form.
Yeah.
And in particular, just to go right back to the point of the question, I attended my first international improv festival in Seattle that year.
Yeah.
And, it was amazing. That's where I met, improvisers from Europe, from LA, Chicago, from across Canada, and was really introduced to the idea of this international community or improv community that existed, and this language and just the art form as something bigger than just doing it.
Yeah.
And was inspired, had that in my pocket, and then the rest of the traveling too, came back to Winnipeg. I left Vancouver, moved back to Winnipeg. Yeah. Started the improv festival, started teaching improv at Prairie Theater Exchange, and took over the Manitoba Improv League and elevated that up, and built that.
Yeah, so, because some people see what's going on in other cities and they just uproot and move there. You know, it takes a lot of determination to bring an idea that you've seen somewhere else that you enjoyed so much and just build it in your own backyard, basically.
I mean, I wasn't really looking to move somewhere, but I wasn't really looking for anything.
Right.
But I knew that in Winnipeg, I could build things.
Yeah.
Whereas in Vancouver, I felt lost. It was a really cool city, but in some ways it was kind of depressing for me. Maybe it was just the time of year for me. And I felt there were barriers, whereas in Winnipeg I knew that I could I had that freedom to be able to produce this and build it.
Yeah. You were talking about going on a pilgrimage. Usually a lot of forms of pilgrimage, as it's known today, have a certain point of like a mecca at the end of the journey. What was the improv mecca for you?
There was no mecca.
Okay.
And it wasn't religious based. I used the word pilgrimage, maybe I should say trip. I had quit my job.
Yeah.
And because I was at a crossroads, to just throw a whole bunch of cliches into this.
Of course.
I was at a crossroads.
You're getting 110%.
I had to decide between, the work that I was doing and the art that I was doing.
Yeah.
I was doing both half-assed, and I wanted to do one whole-assed, like full-ass, let's do this. And so I saved up my money and I quit my job. And I then was like, okay, here I am. I'm doing this now. How do I do this? What is this?
Yeah.
I was already doing comedy and improv and like sketch comedy and performing and writing. I didn't, you know, there wasn't necessarily a focus. And, so there was no mecca to go to necessarily.
Right.
I just wanted to go to places that were doing it.
Yeah.
Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver. I had some contacts in Vancouver. Got the invite to go to Seattle.
Yeah.
From Seattle, met some people from Chicago, went to Chicago, which is, you know, considered one of the improv meccas. But I, you know, so I met Keith Johnstone, who's like the Canadian theater sports creator, one of the gurus.
Yeah.
And I met Sharna Halpern from Chicago's Improv Olympic, which is another one of the, you know, centers of, you know, North American or modern improv. So both of those two schools, I kind of met at the same time and was like, oh, okay. And then, Gary Schwartz, who would have been connected with the Viola Spolin school, and, Avery Schreiber, who was also the Viola Spolin, which, I mean, I don't want to get too insider with the improv talk, but, there were, you know,
some deep cuts.
There were some heavy hitters and some of the big improv, you know, philosophies. And I kind of got them all at once, whereas I'd been doing improv on my own for so long, and Winnipeg was very much improv? Yeah, you get on a stage and you do it.
Yeah.
It was very much that. So I came from a place of that, already had some good, you know, flight hours, on a stage. So already, you know, had a firm grip on that fear,
yeah,
that improv fear. So when I was introduced to these different schools all at the same time, I didn't consider one to be the one.
Right.
So I got to cherry pick and take all the good stuff and kind of ignore the stuff I thought was crap.
Yeah. I kind of, not to keep bringing it back to the whole religious imagery, but that's sort of a new age way of looking at it though, is to say no one idea is right, but a lot of ideas have good qualities to them.
Yeah. It's very much a new age.
Yeah. Is what we're trying to say, what we're trying to bring it around.
The underlying theme of the Improv Festival this year is definitely a new age vibe.
The age of Aquarius.
We've got crystals at the theater. Yeah. We've blessed the theater. Am I thinking of the Human Rights Museum? I can't remember. Both the same to me.
Pretty much. Imagine if you move the Improv Festival to the Human Rights Museum. I imagine there'd be a bit of collar tugging going on right now, just based on the resistance they're getting over there, right?
they're getting some.
Yeah, no kidding. One thing I am wondering about is, we were talking before we turned the mics on, and I'm sorry I didn't have the mics on earlier, but
you should have. It was so golden.
Yeah.
But
we can keep building this up the whole show.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah. But basically, like you were saying, you started the festival, sort of based on your experiences and what you learned about improv and improv festivals. Now, how much of the festival was just you then, and how much of it is just you now? We were talking about, you were writing press releases and all the write-ups on the website, on your own. Do you have sort of a committed team behind you now, or is it still a lot of yourself putting things together?
I have definitely some part of a team. This year in particular, here's the thing. Right after the Fringe this year, I broke my collarbone.
Oh.
Which was absolutely a terrible, terrible thing.
Yeah.
I do not recommend it.
No.
I thought I'd give it a shot, try it out. Mistake. Terrible. So my August was an absolute write-off. I sat on my porch, and I was pretty much couch ridden, and as a result, and some members of my team the last couple of years, Tyler Sneesby and Sarah Michelson, who have helped out with some of the design and the writing the press release and doing the communication and the website and that end.
Yeah.
They were super busy because they were getting married.
Yeah.
So they had this huge, this wedding and I didn't want to bug them, and here I was sitting on a couch, and I didn't really have use of my right arm, but I still had semi-use of my brain.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to bug them, and I didn't bug them, and I just slowly picked away at the festival. It was like the only, it was like my little carrot that dangled in front of me, and I've never realized how weird that sounds.
The carrot?
Yeah, the carrot dangling. It sounded so grossly sexual there.
Do you like carrots?
Yeah, carrots are great. So it was kind of like this this dangling carrot, me being the donkey in this image.
Yeah.
And the cart being the improv festival. No, the carrot's the improv festival.
Yeah.
The cart that I'm pulling is my broken collarbone. I'm the donkey. And so I had this heavy cart behind me being my broken collarbone. But this golden orange-hued improv festival that was like this beacon for me to follow and go. So I'd pick away at the little pieces of it. And so I did a lot of that work myself just because I had this huge amount of time where I couldn't really do anything else.
Yeah.
I hope that all makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Okay, that's a beautifully written metaphor.
Thanks.
Your storytelling skills are remarkable.
Thank you.
It's an ambitious lineup you have this year. First of all, I love that you've added a slam poetry element to the festival. I think that's unique, and I'm glad that carried over from the Spoken Word Festival.
Well, yeah, it was very inspiring. At the Spoken Word Festival this year in June, we were able to do a collaboration on one of the nights where we took improv and spoken word, and we kind of created this format, and based on some other formats, of course. We didn't reinvent the wheel, but it worked really well and was super fun. Yeah. And this year for me has been about collaborating with other arts groups and performance groups. So it was a natural fit, and it was a natural conclusion to jump to.
Yeah,
to and go, hey, this needs to happen.
Exactly, and it's a different audience, right? It's people that, in their own right, would get together to go and see a spoken word show already. Now there's this sort of added element of it's sort of being remixed and presented in a different way and repackaged. Were there any ideas or risks that you've taken in the past programming the festival that, that were either really unique that you'd like to bring back again in a future year, or is there anything that you felt kind of fell flat on its face and might not be a good idea to revisit?
Everything that I've ever done has been successful.
Spoken like a true improviser.
Yeah, thanks. Definitely, there's experiments that we've done that I definitely want to bring back. One that we did was kind of our take on what would be called the Neutrino Project.
Okay.
Which was an improv mashup of live improv and video.
Yeah.
And it was first done in New York City, I believe with the UCB, but I could be wrong with that. Here I am not doing my research. But we did our own version of it without ever seeing their official version. We just kind of, I loved the idea and kind of like reverse engineered it to how I thought it would work. Where what we did is we created four teams, brought them on stage, gave them each a suggestion. I don't know why we're not doing it this year, so here I am plugging this great idea. We got a suggestion for each of the teams. Each of the teams had a videographer and performers, and they would then leave the theater and go to a location. And each team had a runner who would run the tapes back. And all of the video would be only in-camera editing. So live, first take, one take.
Yeah.
And then the tape would get popped out, given to the runner. The runner would run to the theater with the tape. And they'd stick a new tape in and then do chapter two, chapter three, chapter four. And so we've got all of these tapes being run back to the theater. Meanwhile, we have DJ Honeycutt doing a live score. He doesn't know what's on the tape.
Yeah.
Stick the tape in. Here's scene number one. There's the scene. Pop, take it up. Tape number two is already queued up. Slice right into tape two, right into tape three, right into tape four. Then chapter two as the tapes are showing up.
Yeah.
And so a live four-thread story is unfolding live in video. And it was amazing. I think we did it three times. And, I want to do that again. where do you find tapes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone listen, what's a tape, right? That's what you're thinking.
I mean, I think there's enough of a thrift kind of culture in Winnipeg that you could definitely...
The Winnipeggers listening totally know what a tape is.
Yeah, but I don't trust the people in Vancouver to, you know, or maybe the people in I think we've got people in California, people in Washington.
Yeah, those people don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
there's no VHS in Washington.
And then what are we going to do, like... run flash drives back?
It's possible.
But then the in-camera editing isn't as fun because then it's individual files, right?
That's true.
So it's not... Then we don't want to render them and splice them together. Then there's the idea, and we did this in a festival in Berlin.
Okay.
How cool does that sound? Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Where we did an experiment with live from your phone. So live... So the video is actually projected live, so... The tape runners are now out of a job. They're not too happy about that.
No.
But doing some sort of live through the internet to the screen. So not only is it like live, they just shot it live. This is actually being broadcast live.
Yeah.
But, you know, we got to work that out.
For sure. So, speaking of taking...
But we're not doing that this year, so I, you know...
But it's an idea.
Well, that's one. And then the second year of the festival, we had La Lime, the French improv group, which we have this year.
Yeah.
And we're doing a French versus English. So that's an idea that we've done before in the past-ish, and now we're bringing back reinvented.
Yeah.
So that's one. There's more, I just forgot them.
It happens.
Yeah.
It happens while you're pouring yourself a coffee.
Yeah.
But speaking of taking chances on stage, by the way, you and your partner Lee are parents of a metaphorical teenager named Crumbs. Now your improv duo has been together for 17 years is basically what I'm trying to say.
Right.
What do you do to keep that that improv relationship fresh?
We don't actively do anything.
No.
To keep it fresh. But we've always kind of challenged each other on stage, and we've always, you know, when we find that somebody's going into a pattern, we like to kind of make fun of them or it. You know, we don't want to do the same thing again and again and again. That was kind of why improv was so intriguing and satisfying for us. So, we're always finding new ways to do it. And there's that fear, you know, like, oh, you go into another show, you're like, oh, we've already told all the stories that can exist, so...
Yeah, so you're constantly trying to find ways to...
It's not like we're trying not actively to find them.
Right.
But that's just been our M.O., or... Is that a modus operandi?
Yeah.
Is that Latin?
Latin, yeah. You're naturally not letting things get boring simply because you're finding...
We were always striving to do that anyway, so it's kind of like built into the DNA of Crumbs.
Yeah.
Like when we conceived Crumbs, like that night...
Yeah.
That lovely night when we gave birth to a teenager, at the time was a baby.
Yeah.
All
teenagers start out as babies.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah.
I've heard of science. But it was in the DNA to kind of challenge, for us at the beginning actually, it was to challenge comedy. Comedy at the time for us was really boring and stale, and we loved comedy. So our comedy was really strange and weird and kind of surreal and absurd.
Well, even like I know that you perform at the Winnipeg Comedy Festival, but the Improv Festival actually predates the Comedy Festival by 2 years.
Yeah.
Or well, at least they're at 13 years technically. So technically a year, but you've still done two more festivals. You have two on them. So I mean,
yeah, this is our 15th.
Yeah.
Festival. They just did their 13th.
Year. Yeah.
Yeah.
13 rotten years. Yeah, I remember that.
From we slogan. We started before they did.
Yeah. And so there has to have been something in that comedy environment that inspired this festival. I mean, stand-up in itself is an institution, as is improv. It's just, I don't think people would expect there to be an improv festival in some cities before there would be a comedy festival, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean...
I guess the Fringe Festival predates both, right?
Absolutely, it does. Yeah. And I think that... It was probably just around that time, if you look, like, even nationally.
Yeah.
Around that time is when improv festivals started to kind of happen.
Okay.
We were around, we're one of the oldest, actually. But I mean, the Vancouver International Improv Festival, which Alistair Cook and I were both at that festival in Seattle, both went back to our respective cities and both started festivals.
So like quickly to the blimp, we're getting home.
I mean, we caught a ride together.
But, okay.
I mean, and that was, so it's number 15 for him this year and number 15 for us. The Edmonton Festival, I think, is a little bit older, but it started off as a theater sports tournament, Masters of the Universe.
Okay.
And then it still has a theater sports element, but it shifted into having a long-form showcase. So that's... so I don't know how old their festival, like Improvaganza is what they rebranded it.
Yeah.
And I think that rebranding was about, you know, between 15 and a dozen years ago, so... and then Regina has had a festival on and off. Toronto, it was several years before they got on. Now the Big City Improv Festival is one that happens there, and National Theatre of the World does an improv festival there too, but that's their first one was last year.
So this is sort of a 21st century kind of invention.
Yeah, kind of. It was just the time was ripe for people to go, hey, wait a second, let's start celebrating. Improv is kind of big enough now to celebrate in a festival way rather than just the show way. Or there's enough groups for us to come together and call it a festival. Yeah. Or there's enough international or national presence, and people are at the level where they are able to travel.
So you refer to your duo as lo-fi, which I think is interesting, because when I think of lo-fi, I think of like a two-piece band with like cheap amps cranked up and like aggressive like post-punk music playing in a garage. Mm-hmm. I think I'm just kind of describing a no-age record, really. But what inspired the use of this term exactly?
Well, we've never really been there's two of us. We don't have a costume. We don't have props. We don't have a set.
Yeah. You don't have a gimmick, basically.
We don't have a form. We don't have a flash. We don't have a gimmick.
Yeah.
We just come out on stage wearing our street clothes.
Yeah.
And do our thing. And so that's kind of the lo-fi aspect. Whereas there's, you know, other groups that have, you know, a concept, or especially when we were starting out, there were improv usually were these improv theaters, kind of based out of, kind of coming out of the theater sports place. So Seattle Unexpected Productions, Vancouver Theater Sports, Edmonton's Rapid Fire Theater, and then you look at the theater schools like the IO or the Second City, or, you know, that kind of thing. It was like you were a member of the ensemble, whereas we were just like a band. We were like a rock band.
Yeah.
And we would tour and we'd carry our own mime drums in and set them up and do our thing.
Yeah.
And that was different at the time. And, it was lo-fi is the right word for it.
Yeah. So you performed in more cities, so you performed in more countries globally than Sean Connery did in his initial run as James Bond.
Oh.
Which I find, interesting. I don't know why I had to research that, but.
That's a cool thing to research, because now I have that.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for that.
No problem. but no matter how exotic the locale, I find like Bond always experiences the same tropes in every city. It's a martini, a beautiful woman, maybe a card game. Are there any universal comforts that you find performing in other countries, whether it's, you know, Israel or the UK?
Well, I mean, I know that with us touring, we definitely had a certain element of the touring down to a science.
Okay.
And that was when we would arrive in a city and first meet our hosting group. And whether we were being picked up at the airport or the train station or whatever it was always, because sometimes the touring was quite tight. And so it would be... okay, what's the plan right now? We should go drop off our stuff. We're going to grab some food. What time do we have to be at the theater? Okay, that's interesting. We'd like to be there only an hour before, because everyone wants to be there plenty of time before, but we don't have a lot to set up.
Yeah.
And because we were on the road, we value our nap time.
Yeah.
Alone time, chill time. Is there Wi-Fi at the place we're staying?
Yeah.
Is there a dinner plan for after the show? We're vegetarian. We just want to remind you that.
I just think of that scene from Everything Is Illuminated where they go to the little hotel and he asks for the vegetarian meal and they just bring him a potato. And any experiences like that just with the diet?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when we first started to tour Europe, I was vegan.
Okay.
Which, it's difficult.
Yeah.
Especially 10 years ago.
Yeah.
When we first started to tour. I mean, I've seen things, become more and more friendly to, you know, alternative diets, but, I did eventually get my vegan card, cut up on tour, taken away from me.
Oh.
It was just too hard.
Vegan police showed up or?
It's on the honor system.
Okay.
So I just got an email.
Oh.
And then I had to, it was, my license was revoked.
Yeah.
Anyway, you know, that doesn't matter. What matters is, there was at least one time, there's more than one time, where, we arrived at a place, we were performing at this place, and it was like back-to-back shows.
Yeah.
And we were like, are we gonna be able to get some food? And like, we have food coming. And we're like, we're vegetarian. And it was like, oh. We didn't, nothing is open. Everything is closed. It's isolated place. There was no food. And it came down to like picking the meat off the sandwich and eating around it, which is never fun.
No.
And that's when we realized that, as rock star as a rider sounds, we realized, no, we need to have a rider.
Yeah, we have demands, damn it.
When you're touring, especially when it becomes tight and it starts to become like months at a time.
Yeah.
And it's like you're never not working.
Yeah.
Because you don't get to go home. You don't get to go home between your shift. You're still working.
Yeah.
And so we had a rider. And we realized that it's not rock star to have a rider. It's just a normal thing.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, we're vegetarian. We don't have allergies. These are our food preferences. We want to have a Wi-Fi. We want to go not directly to the theater, but drop our bags off. We like to eat our dinner after the show, not right before the show. You know, during the show, I'm going to want a beer. Lee doesn't drink beer. He's going to have a red wine, you know, so that, because after a couple of years of touring, we realized it was the same questions every single time we arrived anywhere.
Yeah.
And just to jump over all of those questions, here's a little document that is going to answer every question you're about to ask.
Yeah. And that, like, that makes perfect sense. You naturally worked towards a rider. You weren't divas. You just.
Yeah. Exactly. It was the straw that broke the camel's back was the time that, there was no food for us.
Yeah. You just basically, what are we going to starve rather
yeah,
than.
Yeah. It's like, okay. And I mean, a great guy. Great, yeah. A great company. And, it was just an unfortunate thing. And they felt terrible. And we don't want to make people feel terrible.
Right.
So if we can give people a heads up, and yeah. then it's win-win-win. It's a triple win.
Yeah. In terms of travel, one of my favorite quotes from Stephen Fry is there's an interview where he's dissecting a famous scene from Animal House where Belushi smashes the guitar. This has been used hundreds of times to describe British comedy, but basically the idea is an American comedian would want to be Belushi and the British comedian would want to be the folk singer who gets his guitar smashed at the party. Are there ideas that are universally funny in some countries that you kind of can perform for any audience, or do you find that sometimes you need to sort of know a little more about your environment to get a good laugh out of people?
The thing is, our show is very much, it's a lo-fi. Did we mention that earlier?
Yeah.
It's a lo-fi show.
It's lo-fi. It's
and it's very much it's punk built rock. On the, built on the backs of the character.
Yeah.
And the character's emotional journey and the pathos of the character. And,
right.
And that, you know, the tragic story of the character.
Right.
And less so on, you know, the pop culture references and the funny voices. I mean, there's funny voices, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But as a result of that, we didn't really have a lot of an uphill battle playing in other countries because it was about the emotion.
Right.
It was about the emotional story. And that, that's why we became a success. That's why we were able to tour in other countries so quickly.
Right.
Is that people were able to connect with our comedy and our improv immediately. We didn't have to adapt our style. And then also touring so much, with that, playing to, you know, places where English wasn't their second language. Or third language, first language, wasn't their first language, could be their second or third or fourth language.
Yeah.
For some reason they want to speak multiple languages over there.
It's top five, it's somewhere in there.
It's great. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it was very much about, it very much informed us as performers too. And we grew and our style, grew out of that environment as well. So, did that answer the question?
I would say
yeah,
so.
Yeah, we didn't really we didn't really have to find that we adapted because we played with universal truths.
Right.
Played with universal human things.
That basically didn't, because I know that there's always the classic trope of like the comedian travels to another city and is like, okay, who does everyone hate around here? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. But that obviously never really came up because you had to go in and immediately speak in your own voice.
Like, and also we didn't tell those stories. That wasn't in the way that we performed anyway.
Yeah.
We were doing, woman loves man and man dies. You know, that funny one.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
But you know, the classic, human story. So we didn't need the references.
Yeah.
We were never built on that.
You're just built on storytelling principles being expressed with exotic and interesting characters, basically.
Yeah, and then having the characters inform the story.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you ever revisit or bring back concepts from the past at all? I know improv is obviously an art form that it's built around obviously exploring the imagination and rebuilding.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, there's certain themes or grander ideas that keep finding their ways back because I think that those are things that Lee and I find interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it's about, you know, fathers and sons or about, you know, a couple's relationship and their trials and tribulations or the power struggle between the low status character and the high status character and authority. You know, these kind of themes keep showing up. Because of who we are. Ultimately, the Crumbs show is about Lee and myself and us doing how we do a show together.
Yeah.
And who we as people, you know, what's kind of in our heads. And I always like to say, I mean, there's long form improv, which is the, you know, style of improv that we do. And that's jargon. That's improv jargon. Just meaning that we get our suggestion and then we do our hour or 2 hour show based on that suggestion, inspired by that suggestion. But I like to think that our show's even like it's even longer form than that, in that it's our career of shows, and all of our shows can kind of like be threaded together in a way. And it's not like you have to see, you know, 5 years of Crumb shows to really get it.
Yeah.
But I think that if you do see 5 years or 10 years of Crumb shows, you can see some of these themes and patterns weaving into each other. I think.
Yeah.
But maybe that's because I've seen every show.
Yeah.
You know, I'm too close. I can't separate fact that, you should have seen it like 6 years ago. We did this show in Munich.
Okay.
And this character, Bobby, who we played last night too. I'm different. He's a dentist tonight and he wasn't a dentist. But it's the same, you know, kind of. No, you didn't see that show 6 years ago in Munich?
No. Have you ever had to retire like a character type or
no, there's archetypes just like there's
yeah
The fun is to reinvent the archetype each time you play it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you've got this certain voice, and it's the boss, but the boss is a jerk who likes this, or it feels like it's not going to be different each time, and then you do it, and then you walk off stage and you're surprised again. You've surprised yourself again.
Yeah.
With how the character is different or how the story ended up being different. You've discovered a new thing.
Yeah.
It keeps happening.
That an actor's like worst fear is like, or worst nightmare is like not knowing all their lines, and yet you go up there with basically a basic understanding. Yeah, exactly. No lines, a basic understanding of who you're going to play or what you're going to be. Do you ever go up with an idea in mind, let's say, not necessarily like, oh, I'm going to be this guy tonight, but rather like, do you ever get transfixed on something you experienced that day?
Yeah.
And how do you implement it in the show?
Of course I go in with something that maybe has touched me that day.
Yeah. Clean slates are impossible to find.
Yeah. Whether or not it makes it into the show is a whole other matter. I mean, I don't try to implement it. It either shows up or it absolutely doesn't, because the show takes over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything that you thought you were going to do, going, oh, okay, I'm going to go, I got this great idea. And then the show starts, and that is the gravity and mass of the actual and the present moment is so much stronger than the plan and the past and the idea that you thought you had.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm teaching improv too, that's very much what I'm trying to instill, is this idea of whatever is happening now is way stronger than your plan, the idea you thought you had. Don't try to force it in, because the now will destroy it.
How do you sharpen your impulses to get to such a place?
I don't know if I actively, again, I don't now actively
no
do
planning?
It.
Is no, this kind of savant, like...
no, I mean, I don't, like, do my improv sharpening exercises when I wake up in the morning.
No, because they look weird.
it's just a state. And, yeah. We've been doing it for so long that when the show starts, the light goes off, the light goes on, and it...
You snap
and we're there, yeah. We're just always doing it, or always teaching, or always, or I'm, you know, planning out a festival, or producing some shows, and it's, I'm always kind of there. It's how I read a book, it's how I watch a movie, it's how I have a conversation, so it's just always, I'm always sharpening it, I guess.
Life is a sharpening experience.
Life is a sharpening tool.
Yeah.
And you are a whetstone? No, I don't know. That metaphor got lost. But,
you are a dagger.
But I think that's what you were asking. Is there specific things that I do?
Yeah.
And so, no.
No, there's no Not ritual really. Associated.
No. No, we don't. I mean, and also even to get even further into that, and this is a little, again, insider, and if you can hear my air quotes with my fingers.
Yes.
We don't, like Lee and I and Crumbs don't do a warm up before a show.
No.
Not traditionally, whereas some groups will, you know, do some warm up exercises or this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Our warm up is, you know, show up, wander on the stage. Our warm up is, you know, let's see the lights. If it's a new theater, you know, walk on the stage, let's see the lights, talk to the guy on lights. Cool. And then it's, you know, order a drink and sit quietly and chat.
Yeah.
If we haven't seen each other in a couple of days, we'll chat about something. If we're on the road, we'll just, everything's very normal and
natural,
like casual.
It just feels like it's happening.
We don't like get into the zone. The zone shows up and we leisurely step into it.
Amazing.
And we've always kind of had this kind of, and that's kind of been our distinction too, is we're not that high energy, hit them hard in the face kind of performers either.
It doesn't feel like a pep rally.
No, exactly.
Yeah, like some shows tend to in the world of theater, you get the sense that some people run up on stage and I feel like the first like five rows are just like, oh, we're doing this now.
Like, okay. And something that can be a great a thing within a concept. And we've done some ensemble shows where that is, you know, built into the format where you want to create that energy. But when it comes to a Crumb show, it's just not.
Or even when you're hosting something, it's a very casual walk on. It's like, it's like people are expecting you to just assume the role of leader or something. It's like, oh, I might as well take this right now.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. Now I'm wondering though, in terms of, one of the big concepts in improv, we talked about it a bit already, is collaboration and, experimentation. And, even I tried doing some shows, some improv shows in town just for a few months and just found myself completely, blown away by, I got to collaborate with Robin Slade, for example. And I realized that, a huge thing in improv is that, not only are you constantly learning, but everyone can teach you a different lesson whenever you collaborate with them in some way, shape, or form. It causes you to kind of, re-examine how you do it, or even makes you a better improviser because of it. Now, is there a collaborator you've worked with over the years that you felt sort of really got you on your A game?
Well, I mean, we always, or I'm going to talk about me.
Okay.
I always try to bring it.
Yeah.
I always try to bring my A game. You're only as good as your last show.
Yeah.
Right? Especially in improv. You can't go, well, that song was number one, so I can ride that for a bit. There's no, there's no charts. But I mean, there's plenty of improvisers that, that we've collaborated with or we've done shows with that, bring out an excitement, and now when the show would be coming up, I'd be like, okay, we get to do a show.
Yes.
Oh, I can't wait to see what kind of awesome thing is going to come out of us. Just to name one right now would be Jacob Banigan.
Okay.
Who's, we first met, he was running Rapid Fire Theater in Edmonton many years ago, and then moved to Graz, Austria, and works with a group called Theater in Banoff.
Okay.
And we've done plenty of work with him, and whenever we would find ourselves in the same town or be in Graz on our tour, we would do a Crumbs Plus One or a... and he's just a fabulous improviser and always brings out good work.
The best in who he's working with.
Yeah.
So it's less about... I'm excited to work with this person because I want to see what they bring out in me, and more so, I'm excited to work with this person because I really want to see what they bring to the table this time.
I think even a step further than that, I'm really excited to do to work with this person to see what we do.
Yeah.
To see what happens.
That's an incredible mindset to have. It's not so much, you're not worried about yourself. It sounds like you're very selfless when it comes to the...
Well, I think that's a big lesson in improv is to not worry about the self and is to be there for your partner.
Yeah.
And the best way to be there for your partner is to be strong yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Help yourself before your neighbor kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or put your oxygen mask on before helping your child's put their oxygen mask on. But any show that we go into or any show that I go into or any scene that I go into or any collaboration I go into, it's always about what are we going to create? And it's going to be great. It's going to be good. You go in there with the positive of already, oh, it's going to be so good. The work that we're about to do.
And I usually like to finish off the show with recommendations for people, like paying it forward to other performers, comedians, musicians. Maybe there's a book you're reading, something like that, basically to plug and promote.
Can we plug some more of the improv festival?
For sure, let's talk about
it. I'd just like to inject some more of the...
For sure.
I know that there's like collaborations within it that we didn't even touch on.
No, well, what else do we want to talk about with the improv festival?
I could talk a little bit more about the French-English thing, because it's kind of interesting to me, because Lee and I toured in Europe a lot in these multi-language countries, as I was talking about before, and sometimes we... Within the collaboration, we decided to do some like mixed language shows.
Okay.
And so we kind of adapted and created some games that played with language.
All right.
To kind of make fun of the fact that we didn't speak German or Italian, and to be there for the audience too, or maybe like multi-language, or maybe just had the other language and not so strong in English. So really playing with that miscommunication.
Yeah.
And then coming back here, And then realizing, well, there's a French improv scene that's happening in Winnipeg, La Lime, which has been around for 25 years. This is their 25th year of doing French, the French style improv. And I thought, oh, we could collaborate and play with some of these games and just go English-French. And so I assembled some English improvisers that have some French, and they've supplied some French improvisers. We gave it a shot at the King's Head and adapted some of these games that Lee and I had been playing in Europe. And it was great. It worked so well, this kind of like miscommunication, playing with French and English, playing both. And so we're bringing that back and adapting it and increasing, just tinkering with the format. And we're bringing that to the festival. And I'm kind of excited about this like mashup and clash of the languages. And I think that's a collaboration that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
Another collaboration that we're doing is with the Manitoba Association of Playwrights.
Okay.
A format that we're calling Cold Read.
Oh, yes, I've read about this.
Yes. So we're getting a script from Manitoba Association of Playwrights, and it's going to be sealed in envelopes. The performers are going to walk out on stage. They've never seen the script, and they're going to open up their scripts. Their character is going to be assigned to them. The scripts are already going to be highlighted with their parts, and then we're going to start and jump right in without a rehearsal or anything. Just do a cold read of this new script and watch the improvisers breathe life into this first time they've seen it script.
That's crazy.
And I think it's going to be super fun as well.
There's footage of something like that at a convention. They got a bunch of famous voice actors together and did a script read of Star Wars: A New Hope. Mm-hmm. And it was all famous voice actors that have done.
Right.
So they put them in different characters and they switch up their character every few scenes and say, okay, now, for example, now John DiMaggio, you're Bender and you know, you guys are Pinky in the Brain. And then they would just change characters throughout the show, but they'd be reading Star Wars.
Right.
So I think it's like the right time for something like that, because people are as interested in ever in like those sort of voice presentations.
Right. Yeah. I just think it's going to be super fun.
Yeah.
And doing a cold read as an actor, as an improviser, is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because you're surprised at the flip of the page. You know, you start building your character and you have no idea what your character's going to do.
Yeah.
And instead of an improv scene where you get to have the decision, no, it's already there. You just get to decide how you say and how you justify how you get there.
Yeah.
And there's something really fun with that. And Kevin MacDonald is going to be in that show as well. And I was just telling him about that show.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I'll be in that one. Like, what? I was like, I know you weren't asking me, but I'll go in that one. I'm like, okay.
He's just flexing those.
He just loves doing a cold read. And when he was here, when I was telling him about the format, he just jumped on it. And was like, I'd love to do that.
Yeah. And he's pretty infamous for his voice acting as well. So
yeah, and he's got a great and distinct voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No mistaking it for anyone else.
No.
Really.
No.
No. No. So there's also a show that's you're working with stand-up comedians, right?
Yes, and another collaboration with the stand-up comedians, the Bizarro Comedy Show. Thank you.
No problem.
That was an experiment too, and we've done it a couple times now, and it's been great.
Yeah.
And it was just, the stand-ups were like, oh, hey, Steve, would you be into teaching an improv workshop? I'm like, absolutely. And then I designed and formed an improv workshop that I didn't publicly advertise. I just approached the stand-ups, and then we did an improv series, and then we've done a couple of performances. And one, we actually did the Bizarro show where we had improvisers do stand-up sets, and we had stand-up comedians do improv sets, and it was amazing. It was great. Everyone hit it out of the park.
Yeah.
There were no strikeouts. Those are two baseball terms.
Yes, of course.
And then we did another one where we did just the stand-ups doing an improv set a little bit later.
Okay.
Like a couple months later. Amazing. It worked amazing again. So let's stay on with the unofficial theme of the festival, which is collaboration.
Yeah.
And so we've got the collaboration with the French and English. We got the collaboration with the Winnipeg Spoken Word Festival. Collaboration with MAP, Manitoba Association. The Manitoba Association of Playwrights, collaboration with the stand-up scene, one of the shows at the festival will be Crumbs with Kevin MacDonald. It's a collaboration right there.
Yeah.
Kevin MacDonald and Crumbs. That's collaboration, right?
Yeah.
It's all collaboration. Yeah. I mean, I can weave collaboration into any improv show, but there's some outright collaborations. And I'd like to continue it. I'm forming a list of like, what are other art forms or what are other either performance-based or art-based organizations that exist that we can bring together?
There's even like some shows out in Vancouver that are like, they do like rap battles between improvisers in character.
Yeah.
Or there's...
I think it started in Toronto, I believe.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, like, just look at like D&D improv, for example, combining Dungeons and Dragons with aspects of improv. Take something like, there's a lot of sort of improvised theatrics. I'm thinking like Space Quest, which was the show with Soapscum that was going on at the Park Theater as well. Mm-hmm. Taking genres and different ideas. Yeah. There was even that show at the comedy festival at Gas Station, the Doctor Whom, which was a stand-up of Doctor Who.
Improv with the Doctor Who filter.
Which is what that show feels like to me all the time. Doctor Who.
Oh, it feels improvised.
It does feel improvised.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There was an episode of the show Rick and Morty where they were just flipping through an interdimensional television set, and there was a bunch of bad commercials for improvised bad commercials for made up movies and serials and things like that.
Right.
And it felt like something out of Doctor Who.
Well, I do think as well, and I know that improv has leaked into television and film
a lot more,
like, absolutely. The writers and the performers are all, they have formal improv training now. I mean, improvisers are everywhere. We're taking over.
That's right. And you can never tell.
But yeah, we've tried to get a rap, a freestyle rap collaboration, which never happened, but we wanted some actual freestyle rappers, much like we did with the spoken word, and have the freestyle rappers and the improv scenes back and forth between those. We've done some with some improv dance. We've done some with improv singing and improv music.
Yeah.
I'd like to. We've done some shows with improvised illustration on a screen projected behind us.
That's amazing.
I was trying to get that going for this year, but it just couldn't happen.
Puppetry? Have you worked with puppetry?
We've done some improv puppet shows before.
Nice.
Dad's Garage in Atlanta and Rapid Fire Theater in Edmonton have done a lot of improvised puppet work, so that's where we got that. And we're actually working on a collaboration with the Platform Gallery.
Okay.
Using photography and image-based inspirations for the improv scenes. We were hoping to maybe have a show at the festival this year, but we didn't have time to put that together. But we're going to be premiering that show in December, which will be photography and improv. And I'm looking for more. So anyone listening and you're like, oh, hey, I build canoes. Can we do something?
Or woodworking and improv.
Whatever. I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm all into this, this interdisciplinary collaboration. That's the last year has been a real thing for me.
It's an art form that really lends itself to that.
I think so too.
You don't see that everywhere. You don't look at a lot of the things you're collaborating with and think, oh, that would be good with improv. You look at improv and you think that would be good to collaborate with these different art forms. I think there's
the easy way to do it and just go, okay, whatever you're doing is going to inspire my improvised scene.
Yeah.
That's the easy way. And that I can just do in a second.
Yeah.
But I'd also like to see how can I, instead of you bringing your art form to us, how can I bring mine to you?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd like to explore that more.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Is there anything you're fixated on right now that you'd like to find a way to implement into improv someday? Like,
I'd say like right now.
Yeah.
I am festival. My festival brain is on.
Yeah.
I've got my producer hat on and I'm like really riding towards that festival. So, I'm not even really, digesting a lot of media right now.
No.
Because everything is getting the stressies of the festival. It's I can't help it.
Yeah. I have a friend who wears a hat when he's in festival mode. Like he's got a special festival hat. Like as soon as that comes on, you know not to talk to him basically.
Right. Well, I've got a proverbial one.
Yeah.
And it's also because I also straddle, I you know, I'm performing in the festival as well.
Yeah.
So to have these clear artistic director, oh, now I'm the producer. Oh, yeah. Now I'm picking up the garbage and driving people around. Oh, now I'm performing. Yeah. Oh, now I'm hosting. You know, now I'm putting posters up. Oh, now I'm taking posters down because I take down every single poster I put up.
Wow. It's a labor of love, right?
Yeah. I don't want people to be confused, see a poster to a show that they have, that can't get to and then feel sad.
Yeah, that's the worst.
I just want to like circumvent that.
Yeah.
But you were talking about ending the show with like shout outs or
whatever. Is there anything that you would recommend people check out or,
right now I'm, sounds so lame, but I'm all in my own little pool right now. Just the festival is kind of all encompassing. After the festival, I hope to.
Well, what's your website for the festival?
Oh, it's so lame. www.improvfestival.blogspot.ca.
Okay.
But really, if you just Google Winnipeg Improv Festival, it'll show up.
That'll be his list of recommendations. Everybody you see on that site in the section of performers.
Yes.
Seek them out outside of this festival and then find a reason to go buy a ticket, basically. Not that you need more reason than this conversation we've just had.
Yeah. But. And then everyone that we're collaborating with, and I want to collaborate with more. I want to do improv with artificial intelligence software.
We can arrange that.
I think that would be great.
Yeah.
Improv. Not that I want to teach the robot humor, because that's kind of like our last human thing that we can hold on to.
Yeah.
And in the future, when the robot human wars are happening, it'll be one of the ways that we test to see if someone's a robot infiltrating. We'll be like, you have to do an improv stand up routine.
And then you can tell it's the way
it's like, well, that's funny, but there's something missing. He's not getting that. It must be. He's not, there's, you know, the nuances of his sarcasm just isn't there, you know?
I feel like we could see this on the CBC in the future. Steve Sim, robot hunter in the future.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you.
I'll pitch it. Thank you for having me. Thank you for amazing coffee and a cute cat.
Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure, and I'm really looking forward to the festival, so.
Cool.
Excellent. I'll see you around.
Cheers. Cheers. Thank you. It's nice to meet you. I know what you've been through, cause I have been there too. Tell me your secrets, I promise to keep them. I won't hold it to you. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. That's our show. Thank you so much for downloading, streaming, however you got a hold of us. We're grateful for it. Thank you so much to Stephen for taking part in that interview. You can follow him at The Crumbs on Twitter. Remember to check out the Winnipeg Improv Festival from September 30th to October 4th. Their website is www.improvfestival.blogspot.ca, or you can just Google Winnipeg Improv Festival, as Stephen said. Remember, if you enjoyed the show, you can follow us on Twitter at TSAPod. You can email us tsapodcast@gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, concerns, suggestions, anything of the like. If you just want to, you know, email and say hi, I'll answer. I mean, you know, I'll put about as much effort as you did into the message, but I'll answer. Remember that next week on the show, I will be featuring an interview with Canadian folk music and children's entertainment legend Fred Penner. We'll be recording that from the UMFM studio, and according to our email conversation, he will be bringing his guitar, so I'm very excited about this one. Remember, speaking of music, that the music you're hearing behind you is the band Nesa with It's Nice to Meet You off of their Troubled Heart EP, and they're releasing a new record, Losing Weight EP, next month. Also remember that the interstitial music and the theme music is all performed by Tyson Brinacombe. You can check him out on labelfantastic.com if you're interested in getting a copy of his new record, Casio Fiasco. And if your curiosity is peaking when I call myself a musician, you can check me out on October 8th at Maw's Eatery and Pub. That's located on Princess Street in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'll be playing a night of music, as well as inviting a bunch of my songwriter friends and slam poetry friends up on stage to participate. It's a night of whiskey-fueled fairy tales.
I'll also be performing on November the 13th at the Shannon's Irish Pub in Winnipeg, Manitoba as well. More details on both these shows. I can just tell you they're free. So, I mean, you can just kind of walk in, check them out if you really want to. Well, that about wraps it up for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for if you like or subscribe or drop some stars or reviews. I'm going to thank you in advance for that. Remember, you can do that on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, however you wish. Thanks again to Stephen for the interview. And this is Matt Moskal saying that everybody's got to open for somebody and just support your local everything. Cheers.